we started in one corner at Opera, and I mean, Opera topped at 350 million users. So it's not like that you can't build a significant community, even though you're doing it one user at a time. And that's how we are doing things. I mean, obviously, we need people to try our software.
Kallis kuulaja, alustab saade, hakkame tegutsema. Saade inimestele, keda huvitab ettevõtlus, eneseareng või lihtsalt soovib kuulata põnevaid lugusi. Räägime Eesti ettevõtjatega, aktiivsete tegelaste, kellest võib tavasti väga palju kuule. Mina olen Indrek Põldve ja tänud, et oled minuga.
Enne kui saate juurde läheme, et ma hea meelega räägiks järgmisest üritusest, mis jälle tulekul. Et Weltforum võeti hästi vastu ja kõigile suured tänud, kes te otsustasite pileti osta sinna. Ja järgmine üritus, mis toimumas on Live to Lead ja see toimub 23. november. Ja tegu on siis juhtimiskonverentsiga, mis kestab üks päev. Ja kohale, kes sinna tulevad, on näiteks Valdur Laid, kes on maksu- ja tolliameti juht, või siis ettevõtja Leanik Järve, kes on erinevad ettevõtteid üles ehitanud. Ja see on üritus, ma soovitan minna siis, kui siin tuitab juhtimine, enese areng ja kuidas nagu teha erinevaid otsuseid, just nagu tööl ja juhtides. Ja mina väga soovitan, et kui sul on väga suur huvi networkida, et just leida neid inimesi, kes mõtlevad sarnaselt. Ja see on minu mõelest kõige suurem väärtus Eesti üritustel. Ja sealt on väga lihtne leida endale mõttekaaslasi, kellega tulevikus midagi muud teha. Et ma ise olen seal kindlasti ja nagu ikka kõigile kuulajatele, kui te tahate pileti osta, siis pange promokood hakkame tegutsema kokku kirjutades ja siis te saate soodustuse. Ja ma väga tänan, kes te ostate selle kaudu, sest ka mina saan väikse osa sellest, et seda saadet paremaks teha. Ja suuret tänu kõigile.
Really interesting things and if nobody knows about him, he is the founder of Opera Browser, one of the co-founders. And they had in year 2012 over 350 million active users a month, which is hugely impressive. And what makes this even more impressive that John is from Iceland, where they have only 300,000 people. And imagine like one person in there, like he changed the internet world. And again, like John just shows that doesn't matter where you come or what you do, it's just how you think and how you execute. And today's interview, we talk a little bit about that. And to be honest, I was quite nervous doing this interview, which again, like, shows the person it's just a great episode. And I really appreciate John for giving his time, taking his time and share this story. I know he's doing extremely great work with Vivaldi Browser that he's now building with his team, and that's just a great episode. So if you have any feedback or questions for me, you can always write to me, indrek@hakkametegutsema.ee is also included in the show notes, and share it in Facebook and in social media. I really appreciate that. And always happy to hear some feedbacks. And there will be a few more English shows coming because I think doing these interviews with very special people, it also helps to keep an open mind. And because this podcast is mainly meant for Estonian people, to show like you need to only dream big and execute and be patient and do it consistently. And good things will always happen. And there will be always failures. But it's how you deal with these failures. That's important. So I really appreciate everybody for listening. And please enjoy this talk with John. And I want to mention we did this in a restaurant. So the audio quality is not extremely good, but it's pretty good and decent. So I'm quite happy with it. So really, thank you again. And let's go to today's show.
Hi, how are you doing?
What is it? Tell me, John. What are you doing right now? What are you building?
I'm building a browser.
What kind of browser?
A personal browser. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, in some ways, I've been doing the same thing for a very long time. I started building browsers in 1994 with Opera. And then I stopped for a short while. And now I'm building another browser, Vivaldi. And really, it is a design philosophy kind of question. To me, we're all individuals. We're all different. We have different opinions on so many things. And the browser just happens to be a tool that we spend a lot of time with. So for me, it's a question of, okay, how do we make this browser work as well as possible for you? And we see every one of our users as being special, and all of them requiring and wanting something special, and we aim to satisfy that.
But how does one start thinking, hey, I'm going to build a browser?
Well, obviously, I mean, I've been doing this for such a long time.
Yeah.
So when it started, the first one is in some ways, I mean, for me, the second one, we can talk about the transition and the like. But the let's take the first one first and then the second one.
Yeah, let's go with it.
So I started working with the web in 1992.
Yeah. And where did you start?
I was at the Norwegian Telecom Research.
Yeah.
So I was working there. Actually, at that time, when we were kind of setting up the first web server in Norway and things like that, I was still studying. I finished my studies in 1993, but I had a job on the side and was doing my master's thesis at the Telenor, or Norwegian Telecom. And we came across this web thing. And before that time, by the way, we had made a word processor.
Really?
We made a word processor with built-in email, video capabilities, and sound. But it was for a document format that no one else supported, but it was a standard, ODA. Anyway, that's a digression. So we find this web thing and we start playing with it. We made the web server, we made an intranet. The term did not exist, but we did make it. We made...
So basically you were ahead of future and now you can name them.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, the term didn't exist. We just made a web for the business, which later was called intranet. Yeah. I made a tool to converting documents. We were using FrameMaker as a tool to write documents at the time. So I made a tool to take FrameMaker documents and turn it into HTML and worked on a number of all the different tools. We made simple search engines that would collect data from different sources and present it in any format that you would like. So we were a tech research thing. So we were building all these kind of cool stuff. And then we said, hey, why don't we make a browser? And we had
just
this,
like that.
Well, I mean, why not? We were building all this other stuff, so why not build the browser? And we had a lot of discussions about that, and there were disagreements in our research lab that half the group said, no, you can't. You can't compete with the Americans, because the Americans were making a browser, meaning Mosaic. Remember Mosaic?
Yeah. Oh, it was a long time ago.
Really long time
ago.
So the leading browser was Mosaic, and inside that group, half the people said, you can't, and half of us said, yes, we can. And then we noticed that Mosaic wasn't moving that quickly. And then there was, okay, let's try to make a browser. So the two of us made the browser. We made a prototype in six weeks.
But how did you start? How were you working in the company or you were studying?
We were working at the company. So we were allowed as part of the research to build a browser. And we made all these arguments why it was a really good idea to build a browser so we could build all these kind of cool research stuff. But anyway, we built the browser, the two of us, Geir and myself. Geir, fantastic programmer, really fantastic. And he taught me that I thought I was really good, and then he showed me that he was a lot better. It's really embarrassing. But anyway, so we start making the browser, and in 6 months we have a prototype. And then there's a discussion inside the organization. What do we do with this? A discussion went on for 6 months, and they didn't want to have anything to do with this. They thought we would fail miserably. So they gave us the chance, nicely, to found our own company, take the work that we had done, and found a new company, which we did. $6,000 in starting capital.
And, where did you get that?
Well, I mean...
Good job.
He had 3,000, I had 3,000. I guess we took some loans or something. I mean...
Back then, it was actually not bad money.
No, it was a reasonable amount of money, but it was the least amount of money that you could start a company with. So we did that, and we were building the company, building the browser, and yeah, that's how we started the first time.
But how did you get the courage to go away? As you said, you had just enough money to build a company. But what was the, like, didn't you, were you afraid we will fail, or what do we do then?
No.
Why not?
No, well, I mean, it has to be said that they were really nice. They said, if you fail, you can come back and get your jobs back. So in some ways, the risk factor for us was we took the $6,000. We did go without salaries a number of months. So obviously there was a risk there. But we always knew that if we failed quickly inside the first year, we could get our jobs back. And in some ways, we were not too worried about getting jobs. We knew that we just felt that we knew what we were doing, so we could get a job afterwards. So this was the chance to go and build something. And we didn't really feel it was a significant risk. It was just fun. It was fun building a piece of software. And we believed that we could build something better than what was out there. That was our strong belief. That in some ways, why not? And that's been something for me. Why should we? Because we come from a small country. And in my case, being Icelandic and Geir being Norwegian, coming from small countries, why shouldn't we be able to do this? I mean, these other guys saying only Americans can do this, I don't think it's right. I think it's just, it's even those Americans... But I've tried to tell people. So Bill Gates, okay, he comes from like Seattle or whatever, and he comes from a certain area of Seattle and from a certain street. So you can, how can you think coming from that street that you can compete with the rest of the world, right? So from that perspective, if you think like that, you can do anything. There's no, as long as you have the right people with you and you have the belief, you can do things. And obviously, not everyone can succeed with everything, but there's no reason why you couldn't. I mean, why shouldn't you be able to do things just like others? And that was our thinking. We can go out and do this. We can build a browser, and we did.
But do you see us coming from a small country and competing with the rest of the world, do you see that as an advantage or disadvantage, or how do you think about it?
I mean, our thinking was just, okay, we're just building a browser, and if we build enough a great browser, then people will like it. Mm. And that was our thinking. I mean, if you look at it, we were starting almost the same time as Netscape. And Netscape came, took all the market, and disappeared before we had external funding. I mean, it took us 5 years to get anyone to believe in us enough to give us money. Yeah.
But how was the starting period, like the first few years? Like, how did you make money? Did you make any money, or where did you...
Well, we couldn't afford to lose money because we didn't have any money to lose. So we had to get by, which is what we did. We got by not paying our salaries at times. But we wouldn't, as a company, lose money. It's just we would not get paid.
But did you get more people in, or just two of you?
We gradually grew. We grew kind of 2, 4, 8, 16. We were kind of doubling every year.
But how did you get the funding, or you made money from the browser? Right?
Yes.
But how do browsers even make money?
Well, in the early days of when we started, browsers actually cost money. You could download them for free, but then you typically would pay like $35. That was the price of a browser. That changed, but we couldn't afford to change. So we kept charging $35, and people actually thought it was worthwhile to pay us $35, even though all the browsers were free.
That's nice. And then what happened? Like, I think Opera was also free in...
We were then free gradually.
Yeah.
I mean, we came to different levels. So after 5 years, we came to the level where we could afford to... Well, the investors actually started to like us because we had built this piece of code that would run on anything. We had really smart people. So we had a browser that actually was small enough and effective enough to run on a mobile phone. And that was something that was special, that we actually had something that would run on a mobile phone or a pad or any kind of machines. And this was the decision from the early days from our side that we believed that you shouldn't need a new computer to get on the internet. We felt it was a human right, so we should do whatever we could to make it run on just about anything. And we did. And as a side effect of that, and also writing all the code ourselves from scratch, we could make it run on mobile phones. And that made the investors interested. So suddenly we were growing from 16 to 100 people. And that also meant that we lost money for a few years.
But how do you manage that growing? Because, again, you didn't have any experience. And then all these new people, 100 or 60 to 100. And how did you cope that in mentally or the building the culture?
I think I was always aware of that this would be difficult. People always tell me it was difficult to that level, and I was always thinking every time we add another person, that's the biggest company we have ever dealt with. So how do we do that? And part of that was getting a really good team. I was lucky enough to work with really good people. I mean, whether that was the head of engineering that I got in to help that was more structured than me, or it was the head of sales that came in, Rolf Asser, brilliant guy, or the CFO that came in, Christian Jebsen. Christian Krogh was the head of engineering. And then most importantly, in many ways, Anne Stavnes, who was head of HR. Because the point was, and we wanted to take well care of our employees. We understood that this is going to be difficult. You're building an organization, and the startup feel is beautiful, right? I mean, you're a small group of people. You're all sitting around the same table. You're all part of the same team. How do you make that work when you are a bigger organization, you're in different locations, and like, how do you make that work? And
how do you make that work?
By taking it seriously, by saying, okay, we need to take care of our employees. And what I did, I hired Anne, she hired other people. So we had people that took care of our employees. And we did quite a lot. I mean, because then as an organization, we were growing. But not only were we growing in the numbers, but we were also getting people from other countries. And we understood that that needed to be taken seriously. You have people coming in there, they don't know the Norwegians, they don't know the language. It can be lonely. So we did things like we rented apartments where we let them live together. I think we went up to something like 35 apartments, each having 4 to 5 people living in it. And this
a community.
Yes, we built a community. And these people, they are still meeting years afterwards. I mean, we built an organization that people came in and didn't want to leave because it was feeling like a good place where you're taken care of. And it's something that you need to take seriously. And I was lucky enough to get people in that actually understood that and did the right thing to make it happen.
Yeah, that sounds good. So what happened after? Like, I know that Opera IPO'd. And how did that, and then what's happened with you next?
Well, I mean, so we continued, we went public, and we continued to build the company. We were growing at a nice pace, we were growing users, we were growing revenues. Things were going pretty well, but in the background, we were having massive fights.
Really?
With the investors. Mm. So I was unlucky, I got the wrong investors.
What do you mean wrong?
They didn't want the same thing as I did. They didn't believe that we could succeed.
So it wasn't very smart money that came in?
No, it was very stupid money. And the problem there is so I got people in. And by the way, they came in a strange way. So the way things work, we got the VC money. And the VCs were actually pretty nice. I liked them. And then the deal was they wanted us to provide them with an exit. That means two choices. You have to sell the company or you have to go public. We went public, and then what happens is the VCs sell their money. One of them didn't. Instead, they gave the shares to their owners, and they were investors from hell. And basically, we had a situation where they wanted to sell the company because they believed that we were bound to failure, and it's better to try to sell. But they also just believed that we had an interesting technology and some of these big companies, Microsoft, Google, or someone else, should buy us. And my thinking was, okay, we're taking the company public. If there is an offer on the table, we will deal with it because that's how it works when you're a public company. But I did not want to go around telling everyone we were for sale because I think that would be really bad for business.
And also so, for employees.
For employees and everyone. I mean, for employees, for users, for customers, it's really a bad idea to go around saying you're for sale. Which is why I did not want to do that. We were a going concern. We were a company. We were profitable. We were growing. People, we had to spend so much time convincing our customers that we were trustworthy, that they could put their faith in us providing our little company, providing products that were make or break for them, potentially. If they put a bad browser on their mobile phones or their televisions or the like, that would be a really bad thing. So we had to get them to trust us. And from that perspective, having a question mark on whether we would be there or would be sold was a really bad thing, which is... I mean, we had to, almost every big deal, we had to convince them that that was not going to happen. And then we had to deal with these investors. So after 7 years of discussion and fighting, I got tired of this. And I decided, okay, maybe it's best for the company that I step aside and some other person takes over. The alternative was even more fighting, more visually.
But how did you manage 7 years with the fighting? I think it's mentally very tough to, like, pretty much going to work and then you know you have these fights and everything.
You focus on what's important, right? So these fights, I mean, the fights were not always there. They were just in the background. My focus was, and obviously I had plenty of things to think about, bringing the organization together, bringing great products to market, competing with some large companies. So I had enough to work on, and I didn't really always focus on this, but there were times that where it would plus, I mean, there would be more focus on it, and I guess there was a time there where it was kind of tiring, and I in some ways it was not only tiring for me, but it was tiring for the people around me, because it's not a good situation.
Yeah. Exactly. But how do you cope with that? How do you relieve that? Do you exercise, or with your loved ones you talk about it, or how do you manage it?
You know, I had this thing, if I had a tough day, I would go into our community site and I would read the feedback we were getting from our users. And that would always lift my spirit, because just getting the fact that people liked what we are doing and I could go and communicate with them, and that would be a fantastic feeling.
So after you got tired, what happened then?
So I ended up first quitting as CEO, and then I was there as an advisor for 18 months. I tried that. That was a mistake. But then I quit the company, and I was thinking, what do I do when I grow up? I spent 6 months evaluating where to live. We decided to move.
Where?
To the U.S., to the East Coast. We evaluated different countries in Europe. And we found a nice spot on the East Coast where we felt that would be a nice place to stay. So we moved there, and I started investing in other startups. I sold my shares in Opera, and I was thinking, okay, I'm not going to be, I mean, building another browser is out of the question, just too hard.
Can I ask you, what was it really? How difficult was it to go from away from Opera again? Like, you built it, and
It's really, I mean, it was a difficult question, but I think at the time, I mean, it felt like that's continuing the fight, including more and more people, having to not only have a difficult situation myself, but bring other people into fights that they didn't necessarily. I mean, there was a number of people that would support me all the way, but I would have to have very vocal and visible fights, and I couldn't do it to the people around me, and so I decided to step aside for that.
And what happened with Opera then?
I mean, what happened to Opera was that my sales guy took over, and I was hoping that would be okay, but in reality, it wasn't. So what happened is that the focus of the company became on other things. So they fired a lot of people, which was totally unnecessary, because we were profitable and had a lot of money in the bank. So there was actually no reason to do that. We had $100 million in the bank and no debt.
Wow.
And they took that money and they bought ad companies instead. And then they took loans and bought more ad companies. And then they took money from the investors and bought more ad companies. So they turned Opera into an ad company. And then they tried to sell the whole thing, and they didn't succeed. So eventually they sold the browser business to a Chinese consortium last year for $600 million or whatever, which is really, in my humble opinion, a disaster. And the problem was that when I left, there were 750 people working on the browser, and my thinking was you need to continue to work on building that organization. Instead, they cut that organization in half over time. So I think they fired something like 400 people over the next few years. A lot of really, really talented and dedicated people that went out of the building, some of them crying. It was really tough. So they destroyed the company. They destroyed the value. They destroyed the product. It was terrible. And I can tell you, that's one of the reasons why I moved to another country, because seeing this happen was not a lot of fun.
Yeah, I can imagine. And so after, like, you started to invest in some startups.
Yes.
What are the startups you're looking for, or what are the startups you like to invest?
I mean, at this time, I'm not investing all that much because my focus is on. But then, I was looking at a company that would. In some ways, I was thinking tech companies. I was thinking something that would be focusing on end users. But mostly it was a question of, okay, did I like what they were doing? And I ended up investing in a bunch of different kinds of companies. One of the most unexpected probably is my dairy company. So I own parts of a dairy company. We make milk products which are lactose free.
Nice.
So they're good for people that can't use lactose, but it's great for everyone. And it's a small company in Iceland. It's a lot of fun. They're making fantastic products.
So how long was the time period from investing, searching what you're doing, and then starting a new company?
Basically 2 years, more or less. A little bit more than 2 years. And what happened then is there was a trigger there. Opera decided to throw away all the work we had done. So 19 years of work down the drain. And they decided to change the philosophy of the design of the browser. So build a browser that was very different from what we used to do. So we had built a community of hundreds of millions of users based on a product philosophy. It was all about seeing you as a user, adapting to your needs, putting in a lot of features. And suddenly they threw all of that away and provided a browser that was very limited. So this was a difficult spot. One, there was all these people contacting me and saying, hey, Jan, can't you do something about this? I mean, you must have some sway, ? There were all these people that had given us a lot of support, people that had been volunteers for years helping us with the browser. And they were all in anguish. And I had the same situation. I was thinking, okay, I didn't really think this would ever happen, but which browser am I going to use? I mean, this new Opera is worse than the others. I can't use that. Are they going to fix it? I asked my friends, are you going to fix it? Are you going to make it good again? And the answer was, well, really no. Can I take the other browsers and make them work in the way that Opera used to work? And the answer to that question was also no. No matter how many extensions I would add, they wouldn't do what I wanted to.
So what did you want them to do?
One thing, I wanted an email client in the browser. I wanted the keyboard shortcuts, all the keyboard shortcuts that I used to use. I wanted the tab handling to work in the way that I wanted. But it wasn't, in some ways, one thing it was about me, but it was even more about, so you build an organization that's all about inclusiveness and kind of you have all these people that are helping you. You feel you owe them. You can't leave them just stranded. They were invested in what we do. I mean, Opera even closed the community site. I mean, we had built a community site which had 35 million visitors a month, and they closed it because they thought, hey, we can just do this on Facebook instead. So one of the first thing I did was to build a community site, which was just a community site, and because that was an easier thing to do than build a browser. And then we started building the browser. And really, it was a question of, okay, we want to build a browser for our friends, all those that have helped us over the years with promoting Opera. And obviously, everyone is welcome to use the browser. But I mean, the point of this was to build a browser for all those people that had invested their time, had liked what we built, had been there when I was down in the forums, giving feedback about how much they like what we are doing or asking for improvements or things like that. This kind of communication was kind of what made me tick. Just the fact that we are building products that people like. And I think the browser is just such an important tool, right? It is something, it's a great equalizer in many ways, because suddenly you have the internet and you have access to all this information. And when you're building a service, it doesn't matter where you make it. I mean, you can make it in Norway, you can make it in Estonia, you can make it in Iceland. If you build a great product and then people start to share, it doesn't really matter where it's made. The main point is that it's a great service. So I think it was an important thing, and I wanted to then, I felt there was a need there. There was a need for a browser, because all the browsers were moving in the same direction. They were going for the simplification. They were not taking into consideration that we are different, that we have different needs, and that everyone deserves to get a piece of software that is made for them.
And that's how you see that you build the community, and then that's how you thought, let's start Vivaldi. So what are the starting points in Vivaldi? Like, you had all this experience. What were the things you didn't want to do the same? Or how did you start building it?
Well, I think one of the first thing, obviously, I didn't want any investors. So there's no investors. It's basically us. We're not going public. We do not want anything to get in our way of what we are doing. We are building software. We want to build the best possible software for our users, and we want to provide them with the best possible service that we can. And that's our focus. That's what, why we're doing it. It's what makes us tick, and that's all what this is about.
So how long have you done now the Vivaldi browser?
We've been working on it for almost 4 years.
Almost 4 years. And how do you see it's growing now? Or the start, is it similar to Opera? You have a lot more experience. You know exactly what to do. So what are the steps of building a browser?
Well, I mean, we're doing things somewhat differently than we did at Opera, but a lot of things are the same. I mean, we have a lot of really smart people. That's always a good thing. And we have the basic principle of adapting to what the users need and just working very closely with the community. So how does this work? So, for example, we have some hundreds of volunteers. So every day we send out a build to them. And they get to give us feedback on that, and they help us. They also help us with the feedback from other users and the like. These are fantastic people, and some of them are putting in some serious amount of hours in their spare time. They help us also translate. We would like to, this is part of adapting to the users, supporting as many languages as possible. So we support, I guess, at this
so
time.
So basically outsource to the community a lot.
Well, I mean, you can call it that, but they are volunteering to do this.
He's like, no, but I mean, it's smartly using the people's help.
They want to help us, and we say thank you, because this is really useful to us, both the translations and the testing. Then we send out to our community site weekly builds, so thereabouts, sometimes more, sometimes less. And then we get feedback on those, and we ask people, what do you want us to do? What is priorities? And we work with them in that way. And then we send out every 6 weeks an update to the browser. So there's a lot of work. There's a lot of improvements. There's a lot of changes. It's changing rapidly, adding features, taking into consideration what people are asking us to do.
So how do you build these features? Or like, why should I use Vivaldi more than like Mozilla or Google?
I mean, part of it is that we see every user as being special and actually listening to your requirements. So you may actually ask us to do something. If you think, wouldn't it be nice if the browser could do this? And we get a lot of those. And when we put it in, what we are finding is that what you're asking for is the same that your friend also would like, or other people. And so gradually we are ending with a product that is can do a lot more of what you need. But we're all individuals, right? So out of the box, the browser, I mean, you start to use it, and there's a few extra buttons that you haven't seen before, but overall it's you have used the browser, you can use our browser. But if you spend a little bit of time, then you learn all the little tricks.
Like what? Give me some tricks that people might not know.
Okay, I mean, they're small and they're big. One, for example, we have a way to take a screenshot. Mm-hmm. You can take a screenshot of the browser or of the full page. Sometimes that is a useful thing.
Why?
Because you would like to be able to, maybe there's something on that page that you want to make sure that if the page changes, you have it. Part of that is we have a similar function for the notes function. The notes function, you select a piece of text, it copies the text where you found it and a copy of the page. This is maybe you're writing a paper for school or for work. And you want to make sure that you have the quote right, but there's always the danger that the page changes. So then you have the backup, that you have the quote for a later use. We have things like our tab handling. Our tab handling is very different from other browsers. So people want to have a lot of tabs. Some people at least do. Advanced users, you can have 30, 40, 50 tabs. What happens then is the browser goes slow and you find out that you closed them by mistake. So we have an easy way to undelete, but we also have a way to arrange the tabs into groups. We call it stacks. So you can have multiple stacks, and by doing that, you can have a much less crowded browser space. Then if you have a big screen, you can show the tabs side by side, which is kind of like having multiple browsers built into one organized. You can save sessions with multiple tabs. I mean, there's a lot of things there. We have another thing. All the browsers, they have history. And the history has been the same in all the browsers from the very beginning. It's just a list of where you've been. And then you can search in it. And it's been presented in slightly better ways. We decided, okay, it's time to think differently. We'll make a history that looks like a calendar. So you can see the day, the week, the month view. In the month view, you can see what are the top sites, the different days that you were using the browser. And you can see how much you were browsing each day. You see statistics on this. Part of this is to be able to find back to somewhere. You often remember in a way that, okay, I don't remember, there was this site, I found this product, and in that same day I was spending a lot of time doing that. If you remember what that was, you can find the day that that was dominating your browsing history. Then you can go through the sites to find out exactly the page that you're looking for.
And these most have been user feedbacks or communities.
This is actually one of those things where there's just innovation. We combine things. We get the feedback from end users. That's quite often it's improvements to what we're doing, and sometimes ideas that are out of the ordinary. And then at the same time, we are thinking, okay, what else can we do? And there's multiple ways that can happen. It can be where we have these brainstorming sessions, but quite often it's just someone thinks for themselves. And my personal belief is that brains think better than a brain, that the more people that are thinking and doing things, the better. So anyone can come up with an idea, and quite often if someone comes with that idea, they implement it in an early version, and then we have a discussion on it, and then we tweak it, and it ends up going out in the product.
Yeah, but how does Vivendi make now money? Or because it's free?
It's through we have search deals, and we also have we include a few bookmarks with the browser to get you started. A small fraction of them generates revenue for us. It's rev share deals with something like Booking.com, eBay, things like that.
TripAdvisor is awesome.
Yes.
So, but how do you see the future is going to the browsers? As my CTO told me, it's a browser. It's like our operation system inside our operation system. So, what's next for the browsers and where will it go?
Well, we will continue to develop the browser to add more features and think out of the box. And I think there's a number of things that I would like to see changed.
Like what?
More peer-to-peer, for example.
What does it mean?
Direct communication. I think there's a problem with the web that we get everything centralized. I think the cloud has its use, but it's been overused, which has a number of problems from a privacy perspective, from a security perspective, and the like. So a more decentralized system is better. And so this is something we thought about at Opera, and we are thinking about at Vivaldi as well. So that's a direction that I believe in, and obviously all these Internet of Things is part of that. I think the Internet of Things, as it is being implemented now, it's being implemented as a multiple cloud-based devices, which is another very efficient way to utilize things, and actually highly problematic in many ways.
How come?
So, for example, let's say you have a camera at home, right? So you have one camera, and it's actually, to access it, you need to go through some page. That means there's a lot of cameras in the same place, which means that it's a lot easier to find and hack. So I think there's a significant problem with that part also. Then there's just a usability perspective. So you have multiple devices, multiple IoT things. If you're into these gadgets, you can easily have a number of them, right? You can have something to control the light. You can have something that controls any other device that you might have in your home. Each and every one of them has an app. So how do you make things where there's the automatic home, where everything works together, where you drive into your garage and suddenly the lights go on and the music starts playing and the oven starts cooking? And I mean, how do you do that if you need an app for every one of them? There's some broken logic there. And it doesn't help that you make one app and then you have different systems that don't work together. What if you like to have a stove from one company and you'd like to have lights from another company and you'd like to have kind of the different devices from different companies if these do not work together? So if you want this to work and you want to see progress, you need it to work together. That's what we saw with the web. What is the beauty of the web? We got standardized, which meant that you could have all these different companies coming up with different solutions. So my thinking of the future, you have a little company that comes up with the app that controls all your devices in your home. Because then you'll see innovation. Then you'll have multiple small companies that are competing for providing the best solution. Instead of these large companies that will just control what you can do and lock things in and don't want to work together because they all want world domination.
Yeah. But how do you see the small companies come like that? Because people buy what advertised and from big companies.
Well, I think the main thing is currently the small company cannot make its thing. If the small company could make its thing, then people would find it. That we've seen. I mean, so the main thing is to have it feasible for the small company to make those solutions. And if they make great solutions, then they can sell those solutions and people will find those solutions. And maybe they'll do deals with some of the bigger companies to include this and things like that. But currently, it's really hard to make a solution that works with everything that's out there. There are so many different systems and they don't work well together.
Yeah. And you see that also with browsers. Like I think your biggest competition right now is Google, I think.
I mean, Google is the biggest in the browser market. And there's, I mean, we have the nicest competitors. We have Microsoft, Google, and Apple. And then we have Mozilla. And I mean, you pick these. I mean, these are some of the largest companies in the world, and they're quite tough.
Yeah, but how do you, like, I know you're building more personalized and what they are not doing. But do you see how you grow is just building a community, like what you did in Opera, and it just will take time.
I think that's fact. Kind of my thinking. And I mean, we started in one corner at Opera, and I mean, Opera topped at 350 million users. So it's not like that you can't build a significant community, even though you're doing one user at a time. And that's how we are doing things. I mean, obviously, we need people to try our software. We believe if you try our software, you'll like our software. And that specifically, if you spend enough time with it. I mean, we are... And if there's something that you think should be improved, then just let us know and we'll fix it, right? But really, we feel that we have a good piece of software, so it's a question of people trying it out and telling their friends. And we need every user that we have to do just that, to try it out. If they like it, tell their friends.
But I think that's the biggest challenge, to try it out, to spend enough time, because the attention span, especially for the younger people, it goes faster and faster and faster. Things need to go move quickly.
Well, then you need a browser that works as fast as your brain. You don't need a browser that gets in your way by being not as good at this as you are. And the point is, we are trying to help you work faster. We're trying to put in little things that allow you to do things faster. I can tell you, there's a lot faster. If you want to go back with a browser, if that means moving your mouse to the back button and clicking, I can tell you it's a lot faster to press set. And, I mean, with Vivaldi, we have the single key keyboard shortcut that you can enable. And if you use set to go back, that's a lot faster. Or you can use the mouse gesture. Hold down the right mouse button and move to the left. That does the same operation. Or hold down the right mouse button and then the left mouse button. That does the same. You find out which way actually you like. Yeah. And you find out that after a while, thinking, okay, this just feels so natural. It feels right. Because you find what works for you.
Yeah, it's a... Not to say anything about bad competition, but it was pretty much the same when I went from Microsoft computers to Apple computers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the beginning was tough, like the new shortcuts. But actually, when you start using it for Maya, it made sense.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what we are trying to do. The main thing, though, is where we are different from the others, is that we do see that what works for you and what works for someone else is not necessarily the same. And by doing things in multiple different ways, you find out what actually works for you.
But now that hearing your stories and your experience, what you like? Yes, it's hard to predict. But if you would stay in Opera, and what would be the future now? Because as you said, Opera had 350 million users, and I think if you continue to grow the same way, it could be the dominant browser.
Opera could have been a lot bigger. I mean. We had a goal of 500 million users in 2013. So I quit in like 2010, 2011. That was a realistic goal. It was based on continuing on the same kind of growth path. Even we were being pessimistic. So I think we would have reached to 500 million users in 2013. And that would mean that we would be somewhere between 500 million and a billion users now, I would think. Realistically.
So now I've been working with Vivaldi about 3 years? 4 years?
4 years.
So how many users you have approximately?
We just got started. So we had our first version out last year. And we are up to about, I mean, closing in on 1 million. So okay. it's smaller. So
you built 3 years just a product?
Yes.
Wow. Never knew that building a browser would take that long time.
It's hard.
What makes it hard?
It's a complex piece of software. And obviously, I mean, to be frank, I mean, we are building on top of Chromium, and people think that that's easy, but it's not.
It seems easy. Like, it's very fast, it doesn't have a lot of buttons, but what's the background? What makes it hard?
I mean, it's a complex piece of software, and it's a moving target. So we are building the browser using web standards. So it's actually kind of like a web page, and it works across the different platforms. We had to spend a fair amount of time actually deciding how to do this. We went through a number of different ways, and we had a number of tough starts where we ended up, okay, we can't do it this way, you have to do it a different way. And we ended up landing on a solution. And that was some of the most difficult parts. And I think a significant part of the first year actually went into just finding out how we were going to do this. Because we didn't want to do it like everyone else. Yes. And so we do cross-platform development. We are working on Windows, Mac, and Linux at the same time. The idea was to include Android as well, but that got delayed a little bit, but it will come. But then we are putting in a lot of functionality. A lot of very complex functionality. That takes time. We are not that big of a team. I mean, we are inside the company. I mean, the total company is 36 people. The engineering part is between 20 and 25, I would say. A number of other people are then working on HR and some marketing and sales. So.
Yeah, but you're based in US or in Europe?
In Europe. I mean, the main group of people is in Oslo, and the main company is based in Oslo. And then we have a company in Iceland, and we have a company in the U.S. We are a handful of people in the U.S., twice that in Iceland, twice that and then in Norway, and then we have a few people here and there.
Okay. And what do you think, how many years will it take Vivaldi to get like 10 million users or... What's the target right now?
The target is to build great software, and then we hope our users like it, and that we will grow. I mean, we're getting fantastic feedback, but it is really a question of word of mouth. We need people to tell their friends, and then it's a process, right?
But again, like you built the community, you built the Opera community. People were quite upset when Opera. But again, like, can you, like, a lot of people following you and know what you're doing? Is it now easier to get the community building up your trust and?
Obviously, given that people know who we are and they're like, it's helpful. But we still have to reach out. I mean, there's a lot of people, even old Opera users, that don't know that we exist. So we have to work on getting the message out. Obviously, I don't think there are many companies that could rake up the amount of users that we've done in this short time. But we still have to work for every user, and we have to work hard.
Yeah, that's very. I cannot imagine the scale, like you're thinking and doing this stuff. So that's really interesting. Thanks for sharing all of this. But you said you're also investing in startups and. One of the things, or even people who want to start a small business or something, what is the, like, a few things you tell them not to do or keep away?
I think the important thing is when you're doing something, you have to be doing it for the right reasons. Or at least, at the very least, you need to decide why you're doing it. To me, it's really about, are you passionate about what you're doing? In many ways, a big turnoff for me is when someone talks about space. Someone comes in and says, hey, you know what, we are going into this space. And in that space, it's valued at billions of dollars. And we are going to be worth so much and we'll give you an exit in 3 years. If someone says that to me, I want to be polite. And I'll just say, guys, I'm not the right guy for you. Because this is a question of, why are you doing this? Is it if the point for you is that you're in a big space, and for me, space is something that's in between things, so it's not that interesting. Except going into space and flying around the moon, that could be interesting. But I mean, and then the exit thing. Okay, you're building something to give it up. So your goal with doing what you're doing is to give it up. So it's all about the money, and. That means you may be thinking about the money instead of the product. Maybe you're thinking about what you'll do with the money once you get it. And I think to succeed, you need to be focused on what you're doing and you need to be interested in what you're doing. So if your interest is what you do afterwards, I don't think you'll necessarily do a good job of building up what you're doing. And that's maybe sounds like a little harsh, but obviously, people need to do things to generate money. Don't misunderstand me, but the point is, I think to succeed, you need to want it. And again, you need to want to build fantastic products. And that means, okay, then you need to be able to answer why you're doing this. And it's if it starts with the business case, then it's the wrong reason. Quite often, I meet people with startups and they're explaining to me the business case. And they're like, so what's in it for the user? If there's nothing in there for the user, if basically you have a business case where you, I mean, it's kind of like you hear someone like, okay, when you walk down the street and there's a cafe, and then you get a message on your phone with an offer, okay, is this good for the user or just good for the cafe maybe? And it's not good for the user. The user would hate it. So why would you then want to build something like that? And there's been a lot of things, kind of ideas where the business case is, okay, you're thinking about the business, but you're not thinking about how you're building something that makes a difference for someone. And to me, it's really about building something for the users. If you're building a product for yourself, for a user group, or to change the world, I mean, then there's a meaning. It. Even if you're just building it for yourself, there's an actual meaning. You're building a product for yourself.
Or for your customers. I understand customer first, pretty much, or user first.
Yes,
user
experience. There's a reason why you're building this, because you think that people would like it, that it's useful, that they would enjoy it. Then there's a reason for it. And even better, you see that with a lot of startups with the right feeling to them. you have this story. I saw a problem. There was a problem. This group of people was not getting an attention. I really think that my product is solving a problem for them. And if you explain that, and then you have a reason to exist.
And in your case, I think it's also like there are other products out there, but you're just building a better one.
Yes.
That's the thing.
Because there's no one else that is really taking the user seriously. They're building a product mostly as a way to, obviously they're building a browser, that's the basics of it, but the thinking around this is how do we make money from the browser? And I think in our case, we're trying to build a browser that is doing what the user wants.
Yeah, and that's amazing. Can you give us finally some encouragement or some kind of ideas for the, like, you're from Iceland, a small country, 300,000 people. It's even smaller than Thailand. Mm-hmm. And you built a company, a huge company, and now building a second company. Like, the mindset or that, we talked about this a little bit before, but any advice for the Estonians or how to think that?
By the way, I'm very proud of the fact that my country was the first one to recognize Estonia.
Same here.
So that's a special thing. And I think it's small country supporting small country.
Exactly.
I think we're coming from small places. We're individuals. In a small place, we all know each other to a certain level, right? I mean, it's more likely. We are a smaller community. I think we can do anything. There's nothing that we can't do. It's just a question of deciding and trying and going for it. And to me, that's an important thing. That doesn't mean that you should have no safety. I really believe, I mean, it's strange. I mean, people that are wanting to start companies, they ask for my advice and I say, the important, you have to be stubborn, you have to believe in what you're doing, and then you don't take too much risks. Which is kind of, it sounds like a weird thing. You're saying two different things. But the reality is, it takes longer than you think. Building a company is not done in a day, which is one of the reasons why I hate the fact when they talk about you have to have an exit in 3 years. If you have an exit in 3 years, you failed. If it takes longer than that, in 99% of the cases, to build a company. And most companies do not survive 5 years. So if you want to succeed, the first thing to succeed is to survive 5 years. So, but believe in what you're doing. Listen to others, but still listen to yourself. I mean, part of being stubborn is sometimes not to listen, know when to listen, know when not to listen.
And I think that's intuition.
There's intuition in there. And it's difficult to know up front. But also, remember, it takes longer than you think. And if it takes longer, and even if you fail, which sometimes happens, don't let everything be destroyed, which is why I tell people, don't take up so big loans or even worse, make your parents and your friends take up so much loans that you go bankrupt, they go bankrupt, you lose your family and the like. I mean, it's, even though it's important to believe in what you're doing, make sure that even if it doesn't go as planned, which it sometimes does, have a safety net. Which is then a nice thing about being in the Nordic region, because actually you have a bit more safety net than in most other places.
Well, in Estonia, but we are trying to build it.
Yeah, which is, and I think it's important. That's my advice to the government: build the safety net to allow your citizens to take those risks and feel that they can take those risks with, which is the time and effort that you're putting into a project, without feeling that if it takes longer or even worst case scenario fail, that you've lost. That mustn't happen. But on an optimistic note, I really think it's possible to do things. And one of the nice things about the internet is that on the internet, kind of, no one knows you're a dog. That means also they don't know where you are, right? They don't have no idea where you are. And from that perspective, you can build great solutions as easily here as you can in Silicon Valley. The difference is that it's probably a lot easier to find the right people that will be with you on your project here than in Silicon Valley. Finding people that will be with you for the duration of the project and can work on it together. And I think if you set it up in the right way, there's no limit.
Amazing. I have a couple of questions that I ask for every guest that I have. So one of the things is, do you have a morning routine that you always take? How you kickstart the mornings?
I don't know. I mean, take a shower and have breakfast.
I mean, normally like meditate or visualization or something like that.
No, then, I don't do much of that. I probably, in some weird order, I hit the showers, I have breakfast, I'm on my computer. I'm not sure the order is always like that. Sometimes it's first on the computer. That's not necessarily a good idea. But I do live on the internet, so...
Always online.
Yes.
If you have a billboard that you can put up, it's not non-commercial, but in a big space where a lot of people can see it, what would be the quote or what would you show there?
I mean, obviously, I would like to promote Vivaldi or something like that, but if you're thinking about the bigger picture...
What would be the message to people?
This is a big question.
Yeah.
I have one kind of... do the right thing. Be good. Make a difference. Believe in yourself.
These are really good ones. Most important ones. So, what do you think about mentorship? And are you a mentor? And was somebody mentoring you in your phases when you started?
I did have people that gave me advice, and it was very useful in the very beginning. And I always... have people that I talk to, and I think that's really important. I've tried to support as much as possible the companies that I've invested in and the like, which is why I don't invest in a lot, because there's only that much time. I want to give them my time. It's part of the deal. The basic idea is the way I'd like to be. I'd like to give them advice, and then I'd like them to decide whether they take it. And I want to give them good advice. I'm trying to support startups in other ways with the startup location and the kind of the startup retreat that we have. I try to give advice when people ask me for advice. I try to do that. But obviously, there's the only limit is my time. So I have to say no more often than I would like. I would like to say yes every time, but I can't. But I really like to support people that are wanting to build great companies. Again, if someone comes to me with their exit strategy, it's very hard for me to get engaged, because it just doesn't. Because my feeling is that the person I'm talking to isn't.
Yeah, asking your advice now for the listeners. It doesn't matter what they do or where they do. What would be the one advice you would give them?
I mean. You can do anything. I mean, I really think you have to believe, you have to be stubborn, but you also have to listen to people around you. It's a difficult balance, you know, how it becomes, because it's not black or white. The world is complex, but it is, you can make a difference if you want to. And I think really for anyone, whatever you're doing, consider to do something that makes you feel good. You spend most of your time working or sleeping and all those things, but I really think work time should be spent on something that really makes you tick, something that where you feel okay, I feel good, I've been doing something that matters, whatever that is. So study something you find interesting, work with something that you find interesting, not kind of choosing something because other people say that you should, or going after the money. I mean, this is advice that I got from my father. He said, study what you're interested in. You may or may not work with it in the future, but just study something you're interested in, which I did. I chose computer science because I was interested in computer science. And I continue to be a geek and a nerd, and that's my world.
Yeah, perfect. That's great advice. And finally, how can I or my audience help you?
Downloading Vivaldi is a very good start. Telling your friends about Vivaldi is very helpful. We need all the help we can get.
And I assume feedback.
definitely. If you download our software and find out that you think something could be improved, make sure to let us know. You can do that by going to our forums and give your feedback there. You can go to our bug database and kind of report issues that you'd like us to improve. And it, yes, it's really important and it helps to provide a better product.
Mm. Actually, one more point. Do you have any Estonians working in Vivaldi?
Not yet.
Not yet? Are you hiring? Or how hard is it to get a job in Vivaldi?
I mean, we are a small company. Yeah. We're not hiring a lot of people, and we try to hire our people in Oslo or in Reykjavik. Okay. So you have a working, so you work with others.
Cool. Good to know. That's our motivation for the Estonians to seek out this. But thank you, John. It was amazing to hear your story.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So wasn't this a really exciting episode? Like I learned so much from John and with the browsers and how we built this and some of the investor things. As I am also part of a startup, the investor insights and ideas, they're quite fascinating. And having a person who built this kind of a company coming and was willing to share this story with me and just amazing. And again, like I'm really thankful for John and for the other listeners, I also recommend like dream big, like act locally, dream big, and be consistent and do the things you love, and that will always help out, and you will always achieve what you want, and especially what I have learned this year, it's not about me, it's about the value I can create for others, and then good things happen to people around me, and if I can do this, then actually I am happy, and actually that's what most important, that if you feel happy, you are happy, then you do the things you do with passion, and I think that's a really powerful lesson that we can all learn every day. And again, my emails and contacts are in my website. Please always give me feedback. I really love to get the feedback. Share it in social media. And don't hesitate to contact. And until next episode. And until that, don't remind yourself, like, be positive, be happy, and always let's help each other out.